Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So the time is 8:30 a.m. Let me call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Caterino?
Present.
Mr. Diner?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
We have quorum.
Thank you. So I'm going to move to approve the regular session minutes of 19th Complaint Screening Committee. Do I have a second?
Yes, second.
Thank you, Dr. Caterino. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed, motion passes. So let's get started with the with agenda item number 4, case discussion decision. I wanted to mention a few preliminaries for the complainants and the licensees who are in attendance. The Complaint Screening Committee, according to the revised statute section 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Now, complaints that are dismissed are usually not disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website according to section 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon the vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda to review confidential records under section 38-431.03, subsection A2, or to receive confidential legal advice according to subsection A3 of the same section. For those in attendance, please keep in mind that I reserve the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon the parties present and the requests to speak. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement of up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me, and the committee may also have questions for you at that time. Please only use initials for patients, children, and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Also keep in mind that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. So with those important preliminaries in mind, let's go to the first complaint to be discussed, which is a case number 21-14 for Suzanne Mumby.
Mr. Diner, I apologize for interrupting, but before we get to the case overview, I do want to report that I received an email this morning from Dr. Mumby at 8:13 a.m. She indicated that she was feeling ill and is unable to participate today. She also relayed that she does not have legal representation to speak on her behalf and asked me to advise what would be appropriate in this matter. I did let her know just now that it would be up to the committee to decide whether they want to proceed with a case review today in her absence or table it for review at another matter or at a later date. So I do see that the complainants are here, so the committee will need to make that decision before proceeding.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So my thinking is because we at least have the complainant here, let's hear what the complainant has to say, and maybe at that point, if the committee decides to ask for more information, because my understanding is this case is in the committee because we had asked for some clarifying information in the past. So depending on what the discussion looks like, maybe my inclination is to hear from the complainant, and then if we need to speak with Dr. Mumby, we can maybe table it or bring it to the next complaint screening committee or proceed in that fashion. But again, that's just my inclination. I would want to hear from Dr. Caterino and Dr. Malott as well.
I agree that is sort of what I was thinking also.
Yes, I think because we've reviewed this case before, I don't think we need to start with a summary, you know, like we typically do. And both parties had an opportunity to speak at the last meeting. We asked for additional document, you know, additional information from staff at the clinical center. So if they wanted to provide us with that additional information And, you know, so basically I'm kind of repeating what was said at the last meeting. So requested document regarding Dr. Mumbi's effort to make contact with the caseload. At the time, the staff were not sure. Obviously, Dr. Mumbi doesn't have access to the records, so she couldn't comment directly. But whatever is shared, maybe we can share the recording with Dr. Mumbi so she can then respond to it next time we meet. So.
Thank you, Dr. Mullard, and thank you, Dr. Catrino. So with that, I think let's proceed with looking at the complaint. So Dr. Mullard, since you're the lead, would you please get us started by providing a summary?
Okay. Dr. Mumbi, the complainant was filed by the Bayless Integrated Healthcare by PD, who indicated that Dr. Mumbi went on an unpaid leave of absence, and basically the PD who submitted the complaint alleged that Dr. Mumbi did not respond to any attempts by the clinical director to discuss the needs of the client and the continuity of care before going on leave. Dr. Mumbi disputed the allegations, noted that she did do outreach to all of her clients on her caseload before going on leave, and that she was unaware of her termination from the company until she received the board complaint. She thought she was still on leave and employed. Dr. Mumbi, the complaint basically said that she wasn't making adequate contact with her therapy services. They brought up other issues regarding administrative tasks, but that is not the purview of this committee. We are looking at, you know, adequate care of client and following community standards of practice and timely care to the client. So we asked the complainant to provide us with more information after they've done a record review, and, you know, what are they, you know, in terms of outreach that was done. And so I'd like to turn it over to the complainants to get a brief summary of any additional information they can provide us.
And Dr. Mala, I do just want to clarify that the supplemental information they did provide in response to the committee's request starts on page 37 of the file.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you want to add to this information? Who is present, Ms. Michelson?
Three of us, and Bayless are here. So I'm Patricia Dobratz, and then the clinical director, Hannah Carr, and then our HR director, Anne Choing.
Okay.
Thank you for being here.
No problem. I believe the request was for us to do a deeper dive to clarify any outreaches and the documentation completed by Dr. Mumbi regarding her leave and outreaching to patients. We provided that. There were 47 active patients that we had on the list when she left. A review of the chart showed that two patients had been outreached with the documentation of that outreach by Dr. Mumbi. The rest were outreached by Ms. Carr. Six of those did report that they had been contacted by Dr. Mumbi, but that documentation, that outreach was not in the chart. And then there was no documentation for the other 39 that Ms. Carr outreached to. We had our IT department give us a report in terms of activity. Dr. Mumbi was active in the EMR system on 9/18, 9/19, 9/20, 9/24, 9/25, and 9/28, giving ample time to outreach and document. Her last activity was changing her password on 9/28, and her account was deactivated on 10/2. And then there was some other additional information just in response to the discussion during the last meeting. So we're here for any questions. Otherwise, hopefully that was sufficient to answer the questions that were outstanding from the last meeting.
HC, when you say active in the EMR system, could you expand on that?
Absolutely. So those who are actively assigned.
I'm having trouble hearing a little
bit. I cannot hear either.
Is that better?
No. Maybe you could speak closer to the computer.
Sure. Is that better for you?
Yeah, a little better.
A little better.
So actively engaged means those clients have been assigned to Dr. Mumby. She had made outreach or had scheduled with them prior since being employed, and they were still her active clients for ongoing therapy.
So had she met with them at least once, all of them?
Not all of her clients, no.
So of the 39, so you said 47 active patients, of the 47, of those 39, so you said two you saw contact in the files, six were contacted, but there was no info in the files, and then the remaining, so 6, 8, 47 minus 8, so 39 clients. So there was no evidence, nor did the clients report any contact for 39 clients. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, what of the 47, how many had she really met with and begun therapy?
I believe the spreadsheet that we sent them. So we sent a spreadsheet of the audit we did, and the spreadsheet notes the ones that she had either never outreached after assignment or had outreached and met with once, or if they were ongoing. So I believe we provided that next to each client.
I tried to read, it was hard to read that screenshot, that shot. Okay.
So I see, I'm looking at it and it says no outreach. So when it says last appointment, those are psychological appointments.
Perfect. Oh.
Is that correct? So, okay. And then some of them were, how many were brand new that never been seen, like Dr. Katarina just asked?
That was not requested, so I don't have the answer to that question. None of these patients were brand new because they had been assigned to her since ongoing from her start date. So she had had time from the date of the assignment to outreach them and start scheduling them. So none of them were brand new patients. They had already been given to her. She was told to outreach and schedule.
So just to clarify, no new cases were assigned to her while she was ill, out. They were all assigned prior. Okay. Thank you.
So when there's a last appointment, does that mean the person was seen? What does that mean?
Yeah, so basically that was the last date that Dr. Mumby had an appointment with them.
Okay. And then when you say patient has not engaged, no show twice, that's somebody who has not showed up. And then you have client transferred. And then you have two... you have those green highlights. What do those mean?
The green are the ones that she actually outreached. So those are the two that were outreached.
Oh, but there's no document in the chart.
No, the green is she actually did document.
No, there's, okay, then the yellow. I guess I call it.
Correct. Green.
Yeah, okay. So the yellow is outreach was done but not documented. Okay. So I appreciate this detailed information. Obviously, we will need to ask Dr. Mumby to respond to this information, which will be shared with her, I assume, by Ms. Michelson.
Dr. Malott, just to clarify, when this was received by PD last month, I sent it to Dr. Mumby within 24 hours, so she has
She
confirmed receiving it, but she did not respond to it.
Okay, so... since Dr. Mumby is not here, we cannot ask her, so we will have to postpone this to the next CSC meeting, I'm assuming, Ms. Michelson.
Ms. Galvin, could you clarify what options are available? I think they can either table it or forward it to the board potentially if they appear to be violations, so I'll let her clarify.
And that is true. If you feel that there's more information to be gathered, specifically questioning Dr. Mumby, it may be more appropriate for you to table it and keep it at the CSC until you've concluded your investigation. But you would have the option to forward it to the board, request her appearance before the board, and let the board undertake that questioning.
I'm going to ask Mr. Dinar and Dr. Catarino, kind of, what is their preference?
So I think, I mean, before going into discussion, I just wanted to make sure if there is anyone else who would like to speak about this. I see Ms. A.S. Is here for this case, I believe. So if you have anything else to share, we want to get all of this done before we get into discussion.
I did not have anything additional. You know, mine was really just to reemphasize that, you know, Dr. Mumby had mentioned she was not able to outreach patients due to her system access being shut down on 9/25, and that our IT department was able to confirm that she had access to the EMR and patient records until 10/2.
And that she did indeed get into the files.
She did. That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that information. So I think we can now move into the discussion portion of this case. Dr. Malott, I agree with you that there's, you know, we would probably need to hear from Dr. Mumby, her responses to this additional information. And I'm my inclination and my personal inclination is we can probably do that in the complaint screening committee as opposed to referring it to the full board. But at the same time, my initial reaction is it seems to me there is, from the facts in the case, there may be maybe some violation of our statutes relating to abandoning clients. But when I'm looking at the statute, 16V, V as in Violet, I think it says abandoning or neglecting a client or patient in need of immediate care without making suitable arrangements for the continuation of the care. And because it says immediate care, I'm not sure if that's the statute that's applicable. The only other statutory violation that would be applicable is the subsection DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board. So that's kind of what my initial thinking is as to the possible violations of the statute.
Well, I think you there were a couple that were undocumented. So maybe H, failing to maintain professional records.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that... general and professional competence, but there's not a letter for that.
I think the professional records is really, to me, you know, because regardless of what Dr. Mumby is going to say, yes, I contacted, no, I didn't, or they didn't remember, or I tried and was busy. There's no professional records to substantiate any of the comments that are being made. So at this point, since Dr. Mumby is not here, I would support Mr. Dinar's recommendation that we ask Dr. Mumby to be present at the next complaint hearing committee.
Is that a motion?
Dr. Malott, do you believe that it would be necessary for the staff to issue a subpoena for her appearance?
I think so. I think it's important that she attend because others were going to be at us, you know, in the same situation next time.
Mm-hmm. Is that a motion, Dr. Malott?
Yes, I make a motion that we subpoena Dr. Mumby to attend the next CSC meeting.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Dr. Catarino. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. There are none opposed, so the motion passes. Thank you to the complainants for being here and for sharing this information. We appreciate you being forthcoming to the board.
Great.
So let's move on. Let's move on to the next complaint on the agenda, which is number 21-19 for Dennis Broadbent. And since I'm the lead committee member for this complaint, I'll provide the committee with an overview to get things started. So this, let me actually pull up. So in the previous board meeting, we had renewed the license for Dr. Broadbent, but we had also opened a complaint to find out more about the possible statutory violations of practicing with an expired license. So this came up because I think there was some that Dr. Broadbent was unable to or did not receive email communications from the board regarding license renewal. So it seems from the record there have been at least 5 days where Dr. Broadbent may have provided services to, may have provided psychological services to patients on an expired license. And there is an admission in the record from Dr. Broadbent that there were at least 5 days where such services were provided. But Dr. Broadbent also said that once he realized that the license was expired and that his renewal application needed to be submitted to the board, he took active efforts to submit that application to the board. He took efforts to be current in the continuing education requirements. So the question for the committee is whether we should dismiss the case or whether there is any statutory violation that we should refer to the full board. So that's my summary. I see Dr. Broadbent that you're here. Thank you for being here. Do we have anyone else who wants to speak to this case? Yes, Dr. Patrina.
I just wanted to mention that it is said that he did not charge for those sessions. I wanted to clarify that they were never billed, the ones that he worked on in those few days.
Yes, Dr. Thank you for that.
And Mr. Diner, just to clarify, there is no complainant in this case since it was opened by the board.
Of course. So let's have Dr. Broadbent please state your name for the record, and you know, you may wish to make a statement, or if you would like to just answer questions, you can do that as well. And again, thank you for being here.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. First of all, thank you for your consideration. And I'm asking, first of all, if you got the communication of June the 8th and also the communication dated April the 20th. Do you have those communications before you right now?
Everything that Dr. Broadbent submitted is included in the committee's file.
Okay. I'm going to be referring to those, and so I was wondering if you had those communications, copies of them in front of you.
Yes, we do. And yeah, I have it in front of me right now.
Okay. Then, first of all, I'm referring to your communication May the 26th, sent to me and the four items. I'm sorry? Did you say something?
No, I think it was just a disturbance over the line. You can go ahead.
And there were four items that needed to be answered according to your office, and I appreciate that. I looked at the second one and provided details of what patient services were provided. Okay, during those times, okay, after, okay, I knew and was cognizant that I needed to stop counseling with my clients. And so I enlisted, read it, and I, in the statement in June the 8th, there is specifically a list of things that you know, we did not do, and I answered all that. But it also asked some of the things we did do that in any way could have been related to the clients. And I've just written a list of those for you to decide for yourselves as to whether or not these violated it. The first and foremost thing that we did after we discovered it, this was starting on March the 8th, okay, because that was a Monday, is we started looking for alternative help for the clients. As I noted in my write-ups here, we deal with clients that are very, very difficult and complex. And so it was very important for us to make sure we get some kind of help and backup and not just leave them kind of out there without services for, well, in this case, about 4.5 weeks. I was very concerned about that. And so the first thing that we did is we spent a great deal of time trying to find alternate help that we would refer to so that they were not left kind of hanging out in the cold. The second thing that we did, or I was doing during that period of time, is I was writing both treatises and also training seminars. I do that. We have a research organization. The third thing I put down here, sorry, is that I was worrying, okay, because I was concerned about the situation. The fourth thing that I wrote in is that I've had some health problems, some injuries, and that was the main reason why I couldn't attend before. I was in bed. I was flat, okay, and it just wasn't feasible for me to attend those other things. It's not because I didn't want to or talk with you individuals, and I appreciate your consideration, but it was for a pretty good purpose because I was under heavy drugs and prone, and so it wasn't going to work. So that's the only reason I did not attend it. The second item, okay, and continuing the things that I did do, okay, and that is, next of all, I responded to various kinds of complaints, okay. We have a 24-hour emergency answering service, and we deal with very dysfunctional clients, and they're hurting a great deal. So we do have, sometimes when I have to respond to the emergency questions, as long as they don't involve counseling and that type of affair, but I had to respond to some of those. Okay. The next thing is I was responding to the directing of emergency situations as they come up. We have individuals call in from various organizations, and they have emergencies that are not necessarily due directly with the clients, and I would answer those. I didn't think that was part of counseling, but I've answered those sometimes in order to assist the individual that was calling. The next thing is, during that time, I did a lot of continuing education, of which you received some materials already for the previous 2 years. The next one is I was attending to clinical administrative duties and clinical maintenance. The next one is that I was assisting the office manager. As I explained, my office manager has had some health problems. That's her right here. Okay, who's also my wife, and she's kind of nice and everything. But I assisted her in quite a few endeavors because she was having one of the problems. The next one is that I was dealing with emergency financial problems because we lost several thousand dollars, and it made it so that we had some financial tightening, even though we had a reserve fund. It used that up very specifically. And as a result, there were 2 months there that I didn't take a paycheck. Okay, which illustrates, I promise you, I did not do counseling and did not charge monies. But there's a good piece of evidence. Okay, next thing is that I avoided virtually all consultations except in those situations where we're trying to find alternative treatment resources for their clients. The 13th thing is that I think I know in some place that we have a research organization called the Southwest Institute for Behavioral Studies, and that's a very active, ongoing organization. We do a great deal of research, and we did a great deal of research then. And, of course, the writing of the treatises and the training seminars. Let's see. There's another one someplace here. Well, in any event, okay, during that process, because we stayed so far away from clients, because I didn't want to violate that guideline, that we actually lost 9 clients. Okay. Subsequent to that point in time, after we were able to do counseling, 7 of those clients came back. Okay. But 2 are still gone. So we took a hit there too. Okay. In those 9 clients that we lost, there were 2 suicide problems that came to us suicidal. And there was one that was in the middle of a schizoaffective break. Both of those they've come back and we've re-continued counseling. Okay. But those are the only things that, as far as we could tell, there's absolutely nothing that we did that would involve directly dealing with the clients, except when we had to contact them and say, we've got to refer you to someplace else because we're not going to be able to provide services. And that's just about all. Can you think of anything else? That's just about all that we did. I'm sorry I didn't answer that part, but I still really answered the part about, you know, not doing the counseling. I forgot to look at the rest of that question. Okay, items numbers 3 and 4 are answered fairly well in detail, I hope, in the June the 8th communication. And so I would ask if there are any questions about the June the 8th communication. Don't say in the details. But to reiterate, okay, from the point of time that we knew that I was in violation, and I didn't know, and the interesting things leading up to it, because we had a problem with our computer, okay, we had to replace it. We had problems where we couldn't communicate with you initially because you didn't have our current email address, because we had to totally destroy that computer and buy a new one, and we got a new internet provider, and that had a new internet address, okay? And so, but from the time we did start the process of not doing any more counseling, which was the 8th of March, okay, we didn't do any contact except for those things I just listed. Okay, I'm sorry I didn't do it in detail before, but I just missed part of that because I was so busy talking about what we didn't do as opposed to what we did do and were they involving clients. And that's about all I have to say. Is there anything else, Mom? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Dr. Broadbent. I do have a few questions, and then the other committee members might have questions for you as well. Before I get into the questions, I wanted to note for the record that you have been a psychologist in Arizona for 40 years. Thank you for your service to our community. And I also wanted to note for the record that Ms. Poe was responsive to Dr. Broadbent's emails while she was on vacation. So I
appreciate that. She was supposed to be on leave until I believe the 13th, and she called me the next day, and I very much appreciate that.
Yes, I want to thank Ms. Poe for her diligence in serving our licensees while on vacation.
Thank you.
So my question, Dr. Broadbent, is do you have anyone else you're practicing with, a psychologist? And the reason I ask that is because if someone is technically on an expired license, they could still provide continuity of services under certain circumstances. At least that's my understanding.
No, we used to have counselors, but unfortunately right now I only have one, and he's a marriage and family therapist, and so most of the clients I have, he wouldn't be able to. Okay, I had a couple of new clients call in, and they were ones that he could deal with, and so I referred those to him. Okay, but for the rest of them, I had to go searching. Because as I sent the materials to you, and I hope you saw those, we do a very, very intense and comprehensive kind of counseling that even psychiatrists had a tough time accepting responsibility for it, just being psychotropic, do as a substitute until I got my license back. But and so we'd had very little to refer to other than my office manager and my one colleague who was a marriage and family counselor that we could refer to in the house. So we had to go searching quite a bit.
That is helpful. Thank you. I'm going to see if Dr. Caterino or Dr. Malat have any questions.
Please.
I have a question.
Yes, Dr. Malat, please.
Thank you. Ms. Steiner. Dr. Broadbent, thank you for being here and thank you for your service of 40 years, you know, providing very needed service. I understand, I kind of empathize with you too, because I know about 3-4 years ago, we changed the system to where we do the renewals by our birth year rather than this every 2 years where all of us, and in fact, we help each other when, you know, like, oh, licenses due. Everybody knew, the whole psychology community was talking about it, and moving to birth year means you have to really be on top of it. And many of us, as we get older, try to forget those birth dates, you know, that come around. So, so I do empathize with your dilemma, though, you know, we are not allowed to practice with a license, which you're well aware of. I appreciate your stopping right away and still trying to be available, because, you know, client care is also critical, but knowing that you didn't have a license, canceling appointments, many of the things that you have described and that was in the materials you submitted, like research and doing some of the financial, that, you know, those are, you know, obviously your office manager can do it, so you don't have to be licensed to do some of those functions, you know, therapy, the psychological services you do, and you did do your research again, you know, you don't have to be licensed. So there's a lot of gray areas in some of the things, which is allowable and acceptable. So, but I appreciate you providing such a detailed record of everything you've done. One of the things, so the one question I had, you mentioned in your letter that you received an email, you found an email saying that your license had expired, your assistant did. I think somebody needs to put themselves on mute. If they're not on mute, that's where they're getting that disturbance. So I'm just curious, what is that email? Because I thought your email address had changed. So how did you receive that email? I'm a little confused on that. I was wondering if you could clarify that.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because my wife and I were too. And I talked to her about it. We got a communication, but I don't know how we got it from you initially that made us become aware that the email that you had was not the one that we currently had, because we switched email when we had to replace the computer. And I don't think we still know whether it was an email or whether we talked to someone in person or what it was, but we finally got it straightened out. But at first we didn't. And so the initial communication between, who's the lady?
Krishnapal.
Okay. And ourselves was quite quite confusing initially. And I don't know how we straightened it out, but we finally got the correct email address to you, and then everything went well. I don't remember how it happened on that March the 5th.
Okay.
I wish I did.
Okay.
And committee members, this is Ms. Poe. I'm not certain if it was an email or a phone call, because I did have several both emails and phone calls with Dr. Broadbent. I believe initially it was a phone call. He inquired, called the board office and inquired about his license and when it would be up for renewal. And I believe he then followed that up with an email to me, and I was able to forward the communications and the letter about his expired license to the new email. So I believe it was a combination of a phone call and an email that we were able to get the new email address and then start corresponding with him again.
That sounds correct.
Okay. That makes sense now. It kind of, yeah. Okay. Thank you. I was just trying to resolve that in my mind. So,
by the way, thank you for doing that, because we would have been lost without that phone call. We had no idea how to do anything. So,
you're very welcome, Dr. Broadbent.
Another question, Katrina.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify again. You did not submit any bill invoices to insurance or to the patients themselves, and did not collect any fees for those days that you were not licensed. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's how come we had such a tight financial situation. I didn't collect a paycheck for 2 months.
For 5 days? of not seeing clients? You've lost 2 months.
I'm talking about the other period of time.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
I had to stop counseling. Okay. During that period of time.
Okay. No, that was the only question I had.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino. Yes, Dr. Malati.
No, go ahead. When we go into discussion, I can share my thoughts.
Okay. So I think, that's the end of the questions for Dr. Broadbent. So we'll get into the discussion portion. And as a reminder, this is discussion for the committee members only. Dr. Broadbent, we would not ask you any questions during the discussion period. So let's get started with that. Dr. Malat, if you want to share your thoughts.
Yeah, one of the things, I was reviewing the statutes, and this is something that probably needs to go on the changes, but it says this is 32-2066B. A licensee shall inform the board in writing of the licensee's current residence address, office address, and telephone number within 30 days. It does not mention email address. So from a statute standpoint, the not informing us of a current email address is not a statute violation. So that's something that we need to change. So because we only use email, and this is something I would like to see on a future agenda, and we do not use any other form of communication. And the licensing, it comes from a very strange address, which for my own personal email, I've been looking for emails. I still haven't received the email for a license renewal for the last, I know I should have gotten in July 1. I went and checked mine, and I cannot find it. And I have my settings set on zero filters because I don't like anything going into, junk because of my job. And so the whole email thing to me is concerning, but that's, for something for our board to review because we don't use any postcards or any kind of thing. In the past we did, we still all get a little postcard, hey, your license is, about to be renewed, and we'd all jump on it because everyone is afraid of not renewing their license. For good reason, you don't want to appear before this board. I think Dr. Broadbent did such due diligence. The minute he found out, he did all the right things. These are trying times, and I appreciate him being here, providing us with this information, and doing due diligence, and I really would just like to, it's a good lesson, and again, his continuing it is tied to this whole thing, thinking he had another year for the renewal. So he has done his continuing ed credit. And I don't know if the board is, the members are comfortable with closing this case. So.
No, I am comfortable. I think he made every effort to correct the mistake, and there's nothing more that he needs to do at this point except keep a calendar with reminders.
Thank you.
I agree, Dr. Catrino. And my only concern was, as Dr. Malat mentioned, we might need to think in the future of it should be a small statutory fix. We don't require licensees to provide us with an updated email address. It's only the office street address or a mailbox, whatever the case may be. So we might want to put that on a future agenda. So those were my thoughts. My other thought was with the 2017 change in our statutes, which ties the renewal period to the birth date. I can see how the odd numbers and the even numbers with the license numbers can get mixed up a little bit. So given the fact that Dr. Broadbent has taken every effort to correct the inadvertent oversight with the renewal dates, I would agree with Dr. Molat and Dr. Caterino that we should dismiss the case. We have, you know, looked at the records. Dr. Broadbent has been forthcoming with the information. He was the one who brought it to the board's attention that he practiced without a license for a few days and then took efforts to make sure that his current patients had continuity of service, which is also important from the patient's perspective. So is there a motion? Because I can make a motion.
Go ahead.
So I'll make a motion to dismiss the case.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Caterino. So there is a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
There is none opposed, so the motion passes. Thank you, Dr. Broadbent, for being here.
Good. Thank you for your consideration. Appreciate it.
I would like to mention, not to Dr. Broadbent, but that maybe we do have one paper notification, not just all email, by the way.
Yes, I am very much in support of that. And so, Ms. Pakanan, if we can put that, I don't even know if it needs to go board discussion, but, one mail notification would be really helpful because emails are, you know, as a person who gets close to 500 emails a day and not counting junk, it can get lost.
And yes.
That's a daily occurrence. Yeah. And when I go into my junk, it's 5,000. So I'm looking at my spam folder with 5,000 and trying to find, and it's not from the site board. And so it's really, really hard to find. I've been looking and I still cannot find my notification for license renewal. I know it's due by September 30th, but I haven't seen it yet. And it's so.
You know, now that you mentioned though too, that it was 2017, we changed it. Dr. Broadbent, you must have renewed once with an email, right?
Okay. I don't recall. I don't know.
The first year we did get postcards.
Oh, that's why.
We did get postcards the first year.
Okay. Okay. So are we dismissing Dr. Broadbent and his office manager / wife?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think I need to leave now and because you only have three cases, right? And I'm recused from the third case.
Yeah, we just have one case, Dr. Molat.
Okay, so thank you all and have a good day.
Bye.
All right, so let's move on to the third and last complaint on our discussion list. It's complaint number 21-20 for Kim Callis. So Dr. Caterino, since you are the lead committee member, would you get us started with the summary?
Okay, I want to say I was one of the people that first reviewed this. I found this a complicated case, and I want to make it as quick as possible, but I do think I need to review a little of the background first, if that's okay, because it is convoluted a little bit. Okay, so first, we have Dr. Callis, Kim Callis, EDD. She received her EDD from NAU in 1999. She's been licensed for 21 years. She has a private practice in Flagstaff and is assistant clinical professor in ed psych at NAU. And it's probably why Dr. Lott had to recuse. A complaint was brought by mother. I refer to her as KV. Okay. There's the father of the children, ACH, and there are two children, L and a daughter and a son, A. So parents separated in 2010. The children stayed with the mother. Father came back to town in 2016. In 2019, he sought to a petition for a parenting time, legal decision making, and child support. And that's what began all this. So at that time, the son started living with the father, and he refused to see mother. The daughter, L, was going back and forth between two households. Mother sought therapy for L with Dr. Callis. We say her name, correct? And they had 11 sessions. But it was not court ordered. Then in September 19, Dr. Callis submitted a report to the court and then began recommending reunification therapy between the father and daughter. So they went to, there's also another psychologist involved, Dr. R.L., and he was the custody evaluator. And he submitted to the court that Dr. Callis should be the family reunification therapist. And this was to unite father and daughter, mother and son, and that each party would have their own individual psychologist or counselor. Okay, so then that started in December of 2019, and the parents all signed paperwork that they agreed with Dr. Callis being the reunification therapist. So in 2020, February, Dr. Callis told mother that she did not feel that they could continue with reunification with mother and son A. And this is where it gets tricky a little bit. Mother had gone through different psychologists. One was an intern, and then she got another licensed psychologist. And so Dr. Callis wrote to that psychologist, Dr. D, and said that, in essence, that the mother's issues were making it difficult for reunification therapy. And she indicated what concerns she had with mother's behavior. The psychologist, Dr. D, wrote back that he did not see those concerns, but did not believe that mother should continue reunification with Dr. Callis, says, under her supervision. And that's important, so why I emphasize that. Then a daughter continued reunification with father. Mother contends that the daughter was very upset by these sessions and ran out of screaming and tried to run away other times when she was with the father. So mother thought that was very upsetting for the daughter to have to participate in those sessions. However, the daughter's counselor did not indicate that the reunification therapy should be stopped and didn't indicate that it was distressful to daughter. Okay, then in November of 2020, Dr. Callis submitted a report to the Department of Child Safety, and the boy said that he had a physical altercation with the mother and he wanted to be moved to the father's house permanently. But then this was unsubstantiated by DCS, but Dr. Callis felt she had to, submit that. Okay, March 2021, mother filed a motion with the court to remove Dr. Callis from the case. And then March 24, 21. Okay, Dr. Callis wrote back to the court that reunification with father and daughter was completed and successful, and the reunification with mother and son should be still on pause. Okay, then mother filed this complaint and we looked at it. Three board members looked at it in April of 2021. Two said that it should go on for further review. Okay, so that's the background. Now, I tried to distill mother's complaints because there were many and tried to see if they also try to see what laws they might go against. The biggest concern, it's repeated many times, the mother says that Dr. Callis is obviously biased and in alignment with the father. That Dr. Callis makes sweeping bias judgments that are unsubstantiated by fact, that Dr. Callis is not really concerned for the daughter and the daughter's issues of anxiety, sleep problems, PTSD, and that the daughter is very uncomfortable with the sessions with her. Another, that Dr. Callis's notes and reports are false and are intentional misrepresentations and don't coincide with the daughter's reviews of the sessions. That Dr. Callis does not give advance notice of the appointments, but Dr. Callis's response is that the daughter's therapist said that they should only give 24 hours notice to the daughter because she becomes too anxious if she has too long a time to think about sessions. Mother states that Dr. Callis is minimizing the son's issues of suicidal ideation, screen addiction, lying, and stealing. Now, this is an interesting part, and I don't know where this falls. Mother wrote a negative response on the Healing Braids. It's like a website, and said some negative things about Dr. Callis. And then Dr. Callis noted this later, and she made a response and then used Mother's initials. And Mother thought that there was a negative response and was concerned that her initials were used, not her name, though. Okay. There's a question that was reunification stopped the day after that posting? Mother says yes, and Dr. Callis says no. It was much later. The son and the mother have been separated 1.5 to 2 years. And mother's concerned that nothing has been done to work on their reunification. Okay, let's see. Then mother makes a small complaint about Dr. K's billing, saying, although her billing system is archaic and nonsensical, she insists that I simply pay what she says I owe her without explanation and expects me to pay her for a meeting to explain her billing system if I have questions. This was only mentioned in passing, but that I am concerned if there were billing errors. And then the statements that that may be the ARS 32.2061 concerns I have, one might be making or using statements of a character tending to deceive or mislead. Mother's contention, not citing this, is that her role and her behavior has been deceiving, and it's presenting an inaccurate picture of her to the court. Number two, point G, that Dr. Callis is offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. She does have a degree in counseling, but I don't have from her vita if she's gone to any workshops or any certifications in reunification work, specifically any training. However, she did work on the job in reunification since 2007. And she has on her vita that she's the court-appointed advisor for Coconino County and the parenting coordinator for Coconino County. But I don't know what training or education she had in that field. Okay, and then another point, O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. Mother states that the daughter is very unsafe in the sessions with the father, but the daughter's counselor says that the daughter did not feel comfortable with those sessions, but did not say that it should be terminated. Callis states that she never saw anxiety in the daughter during these sessions, only annoyance. Point V, abandoning or neglecting a client or patient in need of immediate care without making suitable arrangements for continuation of care. So this is, each person had their own counselor. So they do have someone working with them. They were not abandoned. But the reunification therapy was abandoned. So it's sort of tricky in that aspect was left for almost 2 years. And mother has been not able to see her son during that time. So I don't know if that is interpreted as abandonment. And son's therapist did agree, though, with the court appointed custody evaluator that reunification be stopped between mother and son. One other point, CC, failing to make available to client or patient or the designated representative on a written request a copy of the client or patient's record, including raw test data or psychometric testing materials and other information. Mother states that Dr. Callis did not give records to the court on page 25. There was a court order to produce records from the attorney, Deshaun Pullen. But Dr. Callis said she did submit records to the court, and she gave reports and records to both parents, attorneys, and the custody evaluator. So there's a question, if she had given them, why Deshaun Pullen had to request them. So I don't know about that. So that's my question. It is rather complicated and involved, but I tried to summarize it.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino, for that summary. So at this point, I see that we have Dr. Callis here. Do we have anyone else who is going to speak on this case, Ms. Michelson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the complainant KV is here. I see her on the screen. So we may want to hear from her first.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being here, Ms. KV. So this would be a time for you to make a statement, and we might have any questions to ask you. I just want to request you that if you're using any people's names, just restrict them to initials, as I initially stated in my preliminary remarks. And if there is any discussion regarding diagnoses, we might need to go into executive session. Thank you. You may proceed.
Okay. Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I've written a statement which I'm going to read to you because it's easier. So I originally sought care from Dr. Callis for my daughter, Liliana, in April 2019 after she ran away from her father on March 29th. Liliana had been experiencing significant anxiety and trauma-related symptoms before this event, which escalated.
Please refrain from using, please refrain from using your daughter's name.
Okay.
Yeah. Only an initial.
Sorry. Elle had been experiencing significant anxiety and trauma-related symptoms before this event, which escalated dramatically afterwards. Soon after we began sessions with Dr. Callis, Elle's father initiated a legal process to get custody of the children, and Dr. Callis met with him. Abruptly, she changed her focus to reunification, despite the fact she wasn't given, she wasn't asked or given consent. She insisted on a reunification meeting despite Liliana's or Elle's objection. She never took a thorough history or objectively assessed Elle's anxiety. She didn't provide Elle with meaningful therapeutic intervention, yet felt emboldened to subject Elle to reunification wholly unprepared. Originally, Callis proposed a 2 to 5 minute encounter in a neutral location, but then decided to hold the meeting in her office for an hour long session despite Elle's protests. The meeting was scheduled for July 29th. Elle begged not to go. 20 minutes after it began, Elle ran from Dr. Callis' office in a hysterical state, crying, shaking, and hyperventilating. She experienced increased trauma symptoms for weeks afterwards. Against Elle's wishes and best interests, Dr. K insisted on following up the next week. In this meeting, Dr. K expressed no empathy for Liliana's suffering nor responsibility for the outcome of the meeting. Instead, she blatantly gaslighted, blamed, and effectively silenced Elle. Consequently, I asked Callis for referral suggestions for a trauma-informed counselor so Elle could work through the issues Dr. Callis had now compounded. Dr. Callis offered none, and over the next 6 months, neither she or father expressed interest in finding a therapist for Elle. Elle's father vetoed 3 candidates I put forth in a spring 2020 court hearing. Father's attorney stated that father had vetoed my suggestion at Dr. Callis's behest. In October 2019, Dr. Lavitt was employed by father as custody evaluator. Despite my objection and Elle's discomfort, he was determined to have Dr. Callis serve as reunification counselor for the family. In an email, Dr. Callis offered to play a dual role. I declined and reminded her that Elle didn't feel comfortable or safe with her. In a meeting late that month, Elle was gaslighted again by Callis and told there was nothing wrong with her father's behavior and that she was the problem. In December 2019, Elle began meetings with her father. She experienced severe anxiety before these meetings, would cry and beg not to go. During the meetings, she would often hide her hands in her hoodie pocket and pick at her fingers until they bled. During father's parenting time, Dr. Kaus refused to inform L of meetings ahead of time. It is incorrect, actually, that that L's counselor told her that that was appropriate. I had many discussions with L's counselor, who was emphatic that L should be informed ahead of time so that she could use her resiliency skills in preparing for those meetings and not have to have increased anxiety. L would find out only hours before and call me crying and hyperventilating. Dr. K was made aware of that L felt emotionally unsafe in the care of her father, suffered from anxiety and profound sleep deprivation, but did not intervene. There was an alarming discrepancy between L's experience in the meeting and Dr. K's follow-up documentation. Kallis gave blatantly false accounts of things L shared or twisted her words to incriminate her or me. In April of 2020, father bought L a phone, then the same week presented unsubstantiated concerns to Dr. Kallis that L and I were communicating excessively during his parenting time. Dr. Kallis discouraged direct communication between father and me to resolve this and assumed a controlling role. She suggested without evidence that our contact was sabotaging their relationship and my phone number should be blocked. Dr. Kallis was uninterested in the actual phone logs and texts that proved father's statements were false. My phone number remained blocked for nearly a year. This escalated Liliana's anxiety and she felt she was living in a cage. Dr. Kallis continued to align with the father in alienating me from the children. In July 2020, while on a vacation with her father, Liliana ran away for the third time. Dr. Kallis criticized and blamed me for this event. Elle's PTSD scores doubled afterwards. Despite the harm that they inflicted, Dr. Kallis continued to call meetings through the end of 2020. In December 2019, Dr. Kallis began conducting reunification with my son, Avon, and me. She habitually disrespected me by shushing me, waving her hand in front of my face, or wagging her finger at me. Her disrespect and contempt for me in front of my son emboldened his disrespect and his father's parental alienation. Dr. Kallis went so far as to mock my PTSD, calling my symptoms disingenuous. After only four meetings, Dr. Kallis stopped reunification, citing my son's discomfort with an interaction between him and me. Dr. Kallis failed to consider my account of that exchange, nor have a reunification meeting to discuss or to address what were simple concerns. She stated she thought I had work to do with my therapist to address her concerns, yet failed to describe them until 6 months later. Ultimately, her concerns were generic after-the-fact contrivances without supporting evidence. When I placed an anonymous review of Dr. Kallis on health grades, she responded on the forum using my initials with a purposefully intimidating and blatantly unprofessional response. Because of Dr. Kallis' interventions and negligence, my daughter has been subjected to continued unnecessary anxiety and trauma, and reunification between my son and me failed to happen. Tragically, the family unit in which the children were raised and thrived has been dismantled. We'll never get that time back. Throughout my personal and medical professional history with the psychology and counseling profession, I have never encountered such egregious violation of ethics.
Thank you, KB, for your statements. Dr. Catrino, do you have any questions to ask at this time?
When you mentioned about the in Dr. Kallis' response, she said that she had spoken with the counselor for L and who said that she should not be given advance notice. Do you have anything written from that counselor that says she should? Was there anything in writing that I might have missed, maybe?
I don't have anything in writing, but we have talked about this issue. I have spoken with L's counselor many sessions. And she was quite horrified at the fact that Elle was not given advance notice because she herself always has Elle know exactly when her counseling sessions are so that there's no surprises. Elle's counselor is incredibly transparent and was deeply bothered by the fact that Dr. Kallis was not giving her that information because Elle was explaining to Catherine numerous, numerous times the incredible anxiety would cause, not only the meetings would cause her, but being told at the very last minute by her father that the meetings would happen, sometimes on the same day, just a few hours before, it disrupted her school schedule on a couple of times. And just what Elle was learning in her counseling, may I use her counselor's name?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What Elle was learning in her counseling sessions with Catherine Meyer was resiliency skills, was learning how to deal with her anxiety. Every meeting that Liliana attended with Catherine Meyer, she was accumulating more and more resiliency skills, things that never ever happened with our sessions with Dr. Callow. But again, Catherine Meyer was very bothered that Elle was not given advance notice. And from my understanding, what Catherine told me, she had spoken with Dr. K to ask her if she could please end these sessions, as Liliana was no longer benefiting from them and there was no longer a need for them. Catherine was very explicit with me that she had confronted Dr. Callis about that.
Well, this is a problem because we only have Dr. Callis's comments of what ensued between her and her phone conversation with Catherine Meyer. Maybe we need to get more information directly from Catherine Meyer because it contradicts what she wrote in her response. And then speaking with Dr. Dubner, I just saw an email to him and what I reported that he said at this time he didn't see any of the deficits she mentioned, and at this time he did not feel reunification under her supervision should go forward. But does that mean, I took it to mean maybe it would be okay to go forward with another supervisor?
Absolutely.
And that has not happened, is that correct?
That has not happened.
Okay. Now you mentioned the billing problem. Is there a fraudulent billing, to your knowledge?
Is there a what billing?
Fraudulent, or the billing that is not correct.
I don't know. I don't know, and I have not received billing from Dr. Callis in probably close to a year. But none of it made sense to me. She had things crossed out, other things written in. And so I was trying my best to figure it out. It took me, sometimes I set aside 2 or 3 hours to figure out what she had done in her billing. Mm-hmm. And, her response to me was just pay the amount that I've written for you to pay. Like, I don't have time to explain to you my system. It may not make sense to you, but it makes sense to me. And I don't have time to explain it. If you want me to explain it, you can come in, pay for a visit, and I'll explain it to you.
Okay, so that, I don't know, that's a concern to me if it was incorrect billing. And then the other part about the records, again, we have a difference of opinion. She says, Dr. Callis said I gave all records to parents, the court, and then I saw Deshaun Pullins come, asking for the records, so it was confusing.
We don't have any records. We have reports that Dr. Callis made to the court. But my attorney nor me are in possession of any of Dr. Callis's records. We asked for them. We did not. She refused. And we dropped the idea of pursuing it legally, which we only dropped temporarily. We did not put that on a complete full stop, but had to move on to some other issues. But no, I do not have any of Dr. Callis's records other than the reports that she made to the court. We all have those. The court has those. I have those, my attorney, et cetera. But we do not have her treatment records whatsoever.
Okay, because so there were not, I just want to read what she said. I don't know, but she says that she gave records to both parents, attorneys, and Dr. Lovett. And then she said she calls those records, and then she said report to the court, and then records to the other parties. So that's I don't know. So you have no like session by session notes, in other words?
Absolutely none. And no party that I know of is in receipt of those. We have reports, formal reports, two of them that she made to the court. One, I believe, in September of 2019, another one in July of 2020, and that is it. There are no appointment-based records at all.
And where do you, now, I guess I have two quick questions. So your son, A, he's still seeing his individual counselor, do we know?
Yes, he is.
Okay. And then has there been talk by your attorney or anybody else to begin reunification with somebody else?
Yes, we have final trial coming up in September, and there is certainly the expectation that that needs to be a part of it. I did have some spontaneous reunification with my son because he was hospitalized on April 22nd after a very, very serious and life-threatening accident. And I spent over 50% of the time with him in the hospital. I did trade off with his dad. And for 2 weeks, so I was there in the hospital 15 hours a day or so when he was discharged from ICU. I saw him every day or near for about the first week, and then nearly every day after that. He kind of reverted back to ways of being because of his current situation. But for the time that he was in the hospital and for that 2 weeks, our relationship was very much consistent with how it used to be. I raised these two children by myself for most of their lives. My son and I my daughter and I had a very close and connected and authentic, deep relationship with one another. Things did not become difficult between us at all until their father moved to Flagstaff in 2016. At that time, my son started stealing and started acting very differently towards me. The children were both observant of their father's abuse, emotional abuse of me, and watched that. My son unfortunately began to adopt some of those patterns of behavior.
Let me ask you, when you began therapy with Dr. Callis, the initial first therapy, did she ask for informed consent from both parents or just you?
I think just me. At that time, the children were not, they did not have any legal connected parenting time with their father. They were spending time with their father, but there was nothing. Their father left in 2010. I was left a single parent. So we never established any kind of legal parenting agreement at that time. The children were solely in my care.
And then did she do a treatment plan with you?
Absolutely not.
Then we don't think she did a treatment plan with the father. So no informed consent or inclusion of the father until the 9th or 10th or 11th session.
She decided to have a meeting with him early on in our session. And after that, really completely switched gears. After only a couple sessions with Liliana, really switched focus to reunification. The reason I brought Liliana or Elle to see Dr. Callis was to address her anxiety and trauma symptoms.
But at this point, there was, you know, since you were not married, but he was recognized as the father. I would think she knew he existed. He was at the sessions, that he should have had given informed consent also for her therapy, and she only received that from you.
I was told by my attorney at the time that that wasn't necessary. I don't know, but that's not my decision to make anyway. So
no, I just to your knowledge. Okay, I think I'll take a break. Dr. Diner, do you have other questions?
Thank you, Dr. Catrino. I have no questions for KV, but I would like to hear from Dr. Callis at this point. So Dr. Callis, if you wouldn't mind, thank you for being here. If you would like to make a statement, you can do so, or if you just want to answer questions, we can do that as well.
Okay, thank you so much. First of all, I really want to thank you for getting this on the agenda in such a timely manner. I truly appreciate it, because I know that there was just a multitude of documents to comb through. I have had training in doing this type of work. I belong to the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts and attend trainings with them and various local trainings, and I can provide you a list for those, but I can't recount those off the top of my head right now.
Yeah, I would like to see the trainings. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I would be happy to do that. I have been doing work with families in the court system for a couple of decades now. I am well aware of the pitfalls involved in this kind of work. And even in review of this case, you've been given a lot of falsities. And I believe that my decisions and my actions have all been clinically appropriate, but I am obviously open to feedback from the committee. There's a few things I'd like to clear up before you start with the questions. One is the abandonment of reunification counseling. I paused reunification counseling between mother and son because it was becoming emotionally detrimental to the son. And there were some issues that I felt that mom could address in her own therapy. And my hope was at the time that within a month or two, we could restart reunification. My intent was never to have it be put on hold infinitely. My intent was to have her work on a couple of things, come back so we could get restarted. At the time, I tried to meet with her to talk with her about what I was seeing, but she claimed I was triggering her PTSD. So I was unable to be very direct with her about some of the things I was seeing. So I know in part of her complaint, she's saying that I was never forthcoming in what those issues were. And I tried very hard to let her know, but I don't think she was just in a place to hear them. And I wanted to meet with her therapist at the time, Megan Trezza, who was a intern over at Northam Family Health Center. And I spoke to both Ms. Trezza and the supervisor, Ms. Trezza's supervisor, and both of them wanted to consult with their legal team because this was a court-involved case. Even though I had a release of information, and to be clear, I was not seeking information about KV's therapy at all. I just wanted to talk to them about some of the issues I was seeing that KV would benefit from working on with her son. And the response from them was, we don't do that kind of work. We're just here to support our clients. We don't help them, through court process and that sort of thing. Then at the time I offered to meet with KV and her attorney.
Dr. Callis, will you please refrain from referring to the complaint and the patient by her name and use initials?
Didn't I say KV?
I thought you were saying KV. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay, no, KV. So I offered to meet with KV and her first attorney or second attorney, her third attorney. I offered to meet, if she went to a different therapist, and there was never any movement. And quite honestly, if somebody told me that my reunification with my child was on hold until I looked at some of my own issues, I would have been knocking on, you know, a psychologist's door the next week, quite honestly. So I don't know why it took so long for me to ultimately hear from KV's new therapist in August, after I had paused reunification in February. Now, throughout this time between February and August, I had contacted the son multiple times, a handful of times, about would he be willing to begin reunification counseling again. And he was adamant, not until my mom works on her stuff, I just can't do it. And I said, would you be willing to go to another therapist? No, I can't do it. And so every time there was a switch in KV's attorneys, and they would ask me about reunification, I again would touch base with A and you know, try to prompt him to do something else. But he was steadfast in his refusal to continue reunification until he knew that his mom was working on her own things. There are several other things that are not accurate, but I'll just pause there and let you all ask questions, and I'm happy to answer anything that you may have.
Did you obtain informed consent from father?
Yes.
And
not immediately, because I was led to believe that mother had sole decision-making power. And so as soon as I found out that she did not, I did have to get informed consent from father.
So you did not ask for a divorce, or not a divorce, but any court paperwork in the beginning that shows who had authority over the child?
That's correct.
Well, that's something maybe to keep in mind.
Yes.
And the treatment plans, you didn't do any treatment?
Treatment plans, I didn't really have much of a chance to do, because in the first 11 sessions I had with the daughter, I was trying to figure out where this alleged trauma was coming from with the daughter. Because there was, I kept hearing that the daughter had been traumatized and that she was suffering from trauma, but I could never ever find the source of the trauma. And in my report in September, well, let me back up. So I never found a source of trauma. There was no child abuse. There was the daughter herself acknowledged the father had never yelled at her. The father had never raised a hand at her. The father had never been intimidating towards her. And so I explained to mother and daughter that father was going to pursue court action to get parenting time with his daughter and pursue reunification, and that if we could do it in a therapeutic space, that both of them would have more of a say of the speed in how this would go and how in the process it would take. And so the daughter and I worked for a couple of sessions, several sessions, about what it was going to be like for us to meet with her father. We role played what she wanted to say. We talked about her asking for a break. We talked about her using a code word if she needed to take a break. We talked about rules that she had for the meeting. For example, she didn't want her father to greet her with any term of endearment or try to hug her. And we talked about the specific topics that she wanted to get through to him. And she also asked me if I would bring my dog to the session for comfort, which I did. And then when we got in the session, it was like there was a script that came out of left field. It culminated in the daughter saying, I never want to see you again, and running from my office. And so at that point, Well, not at that point, because I met with mother and daughter afterwards to talk about what had happened, how do we move forward, where do we go from here? And mother asked for a referral for another counselor or psychologist that specialized in trauma. Most counselors and psychologists in private practice specialize in trauma. And so I didn't know of any that just did that. And so I told her if I found anyone, I would let her know. But that's when we ceased treatment. She wanted her daughter seen by somebody else. And I fully supported that because I thought maybe somehow I missed where that source of trauma was.
So, okay, a couple points. I mean, you could have had a treatment plan that said explore source of trauma as a goal, you know, and then
true.
You know, even if you didn't know. What about these records? Did you send the parents notes of each session?
Absolutely not.
And was there a reason for that?
Yes.
If they want, when they requested them, because they are, you know, legal guardians.
The father was opposed to me releasing the records, so my hands were pretty much tied there. Both parents agreed early on when I started working it wasn't even when I started doing reunification, it was when I was just Elle's therapist. Both parents agreed to keep the records confidential so the children could be assured that whatever they talk about in my office, they felt relatively safe to share what they needed and wanted to share. So I was able, because I had something in writing from both parents saying that and their attorneys saying that those records would be confidential. So I was able to give the children some reassurance that, hey, what we talk about in here stays in here, that sort of thing. And so when mother's attorney subpoenaed my records, of course, my first response was to contact dad and say, do you agree with releasing these records? And he said, absolutely not. And so I had written a letter to the court. By the way, I've only submitted two things to the court. One was a letter asking that my records remain confidential because there were certain things in them I actually think would hinder their relationship with their parents, with the kids' relationship with their parents. And so after the subpoena, then I filed a motion to quash the subpoena. And like, as I said, dad opposed the release of records. So, you know, I could certainly release some redacted records, but I don't.
So my understanding is many psychologists, and I could be wrong, many psychologists have these notes, you know, have a form. I'm not going to release my notes, but my understanding is only if they've had a safe haven case that has been decided on before can the records be excluded from the parental guardian. You know, even I that's what these notes where they sign are nice, but they may not hold up. It only the safe haven can be where everything can be. You could have requested safe haven therapy and that would have been confidential, my understanding.
Okay. And I can release the records if both parents agree.
I don't know if that's true because I went to an ethical training, this sideline. Father had molested the child, was in jail. He requested the records, he got them. So I've heard that the parents' rights trump everything unless you have a safe haven. So we have to find.
Okay. Also, in my informed consent, my very first sentence under confidentiality reads, parents of minors have the legal right to know what information is discussed in therapy sessions. Since this is often counterproductive, parents are asked to allow the confidentiality of therapy sessions to be protected. And both parents sign that informed consent.
I think we'd have to check with maybe Dr. Diner as an attorney. So I don't know.
Okay.
And what about the billing? Is there a question there?
No fraud with the billing. The confusion came in when KV would send back the billing and say, no, this session had this person in it and this session had this person in it, and I would write back, and we had several email exchanges where I said, no, A did not attend this session, this was L's session, or this was your session, and I can understand where it got a little confusing, because, you know, there were multiple people in this family, but I explained it repeatedly, and if you do take a look at the copy of the billing that's submitted, you know, I tried to write to clarify, but KB wrote all over it. So it does look very confusing now. There was no fraudulent billing. I billed for sessions I conducted, and KB, aside, she had asked me for some copies of some, records, prior to filing this complaint, which I provided for her and gave her a bill, but she returned the records and said I didn't owe her anything, and I just wrote it off.
Right. And then, are you familiar with the APA guidelines for child custody evaluations and family law proceedings?
Yeah.
Okay, so the main one there I see is that the unbiased, you know, you need to be unbiased. When the mother stated that she felt you were being biased towards the father, you know, how was this resolved?
I don't think it was resolved, and hence we're here today.
How was it addressed? I guess I should say addressed. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, there were things that the father either had done or was doing that that I addressed with him in his parenting relationship. He was very open receptive to that feedback. Mom had a harder time with that. As far as being biased, as I wrote in my response, I know that Dad and I more often than not agreed to what the intent was of the parenting agreement that they signed, and often Mom was not in agreement to that. And I don't know how one can resolve that, quite honestly.
And the last question I have is, the mother's complaint, she talks about her daughter was upset and traumatized with the reunification therapy with father, yet those were continued, but the son had those same concerns, and yet his reunification was stopped, or different concerns, but also upset by the, so why, how did you make the decision that one reunification would stop and one would go ahead?
Because I witnessed the son's distress and anxiety and depression and distress during the reunification sessions and after the reunification sessions. I did not witness anything in the daughter's demeanor other than occasionally she was annoyed. By the way, I don't mean to get off topic, but I did want to say that I do believe that there was one session that father brought daughter to that he had not notified her until immediately before, but I have no knowledge of that. I schedule the appointments with the parents. And so I don't schedule the appointment with the parents and then make a second phone call to the child, making sure that they know when the appointment is, if that makes any sense. So Dad did not give the daughter ample heads up, and she was very annoyed during that session, which I can understand. It cut into some plans that she had. So we had discussed, because it did seem like if daughter knew a week in advance, she would get very, very anxious before the sessions. I consulted continually with daughter's therapist about how to make the sessions as productive and comfortable for daughter as possible, because in my experience, all reunification is uncomfortable. Otherwise you wouldn't need it. So in one of the things I specifically asked her is, how much notice do you think Elle should have prior to the sessions. And she said, I think 24 hours would be optimal. I passed that on to Dad. And after that, that's the practice we had.
So, you know, usually what I do, not saying I do everything perfectly, but if I have two parents that are not in agreement, I send the notice. I alternate sessions with one parent and the other, and then I send the notice, though, of all sessions to both parents at the same time. Do you send the notice of the appointment to both parents at the same time?
No, because I don't alternate. I was doing reunification counseling, yes, not with mother and daughter, but with father and daughter. Mother knew reunification counseling was taking place. And after every session, I would send mom a notification and let her know kind of a summary of what happened in the session. And that we had
met. But it didn't say next meeting on this date. That's a summary. Okay.
No, we didn't always schedule then. It was, especially towards the end, it was kind of as needed because things were going well.
Well, that's all for now. Thank you, Dr. Dunn.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino, and thank you, Dr. Callis, for answering the questions. I do not have any more questions at this time to ask you. So let's move on to the discussion portion of this. And just as a reminder, the discussion is just between the committee members without any interruptions from the complainant or the licensee.
Can I request this be an executive session?
Sure. Yeah. If that's a motion, I'll second it.
Okay, thank you.
So all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, the motion passes. Let's.
And that's for legal advice.
Yes, that's what I, yes, exactly. Okay.
I'm sorry, I had a
All right, we are back in the regular session of the Complaint Screening Committee. It's 10:19 a.m. So just as a reminder, we are in the discussion portion of this. So we ask the complainant and Dr. Callis for no interruptions. Dr. Catrino, since you're the lead committee member, do you want to get the discussion started?
There were a couple of legal questions concerning the release of information in the records and whether Dr. Callis can refuse to release them under a law that would be detrimental to the child. I think we might need to explore that a little more. I don't think we got a totally definitive answer. I do think there were concerns about not getting informed consent immediately from father, even though it was gotten later. So those are the training. Dr. Callis said she would send us more information about the training she's received in this area also. And the other questions I had were meeting, getting information from the child's counselor, L's counselor, and maybe even A's counselor, but mostly L's about the notifications of the appointments. So those are things I thought we needed a little more information on those points.
Dr. Catrino, yes, I agree with your assessment of that. And my initial inclination is, you know, while we're waiting for that information, we can keep this matter at the complaint screening committee stage. And once we, as the committee, have a chance to review that information, maybe at that point, we might have more questions to ask Dr. Callis. Let's proceed that way. And at that point, if we think there is a potential violation of our statutes or the ethics rules, we can refer the matter to the board, or if at that point we think that a dismissal is appropriate, then we can also, as a committee, dismiss the case. So that's sort of my initial inclination. What are your thoughts, Dr. Catrino?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a few questions we need to get solved before we decide to go to the next level, or at least get answers to.
This is Jean Galvin. Can I ask for one area of clarification, and it may be that I didn't hear correctly, but KV stated in her testimony before the committee that she has never received any session notes from Dr. Kellis.
Yes.
Yet she said there was an inconsistency between what happened in session and the reports of sessions by her daughter, Elle.
I think that she, well, in my opinion, we can ask her, well, there were two reports submitted to the court, and that's where the inconsistency, but we could ask KV.
Or staff could follow up and ask her to clarify. I didn't know if she was getting that information from those reports. It wasn't clear to me, but maybe staff could clarify that before the next CSC meeting.
Well, she did say clearly, I never received notes.
Right. And she also said there was an inconsistency between what her daughter reported occurred and the session notes. But right. Again, maybe it was just in the report.
Maybe the report, yeah. We have to look at the exact wording. She's saying notes or report.
I can speak to that if you'd like me to.
I'm sorry, actually, no, this is a time for discussion.
Oh, that's right.
I apologize, but you know, we have to follow our process. So I think, can we do this as a direction to staff to gather more information, or do you need a motion, Ms. Gavin?
No, I think if there's a consensus of the information that you would request prior to the next meeting, and I unless staff needs clarification of what that information is, then that's sufficient. You could just have a motion to continue this to the next meeting or to a meeting where the information is available.
Thank you, Ms. Okay. Gavin. Is there any clarification that's needed? I think I heard two separate providers, Dr. Meyer and Dr. Dubner.
Yes, and I don't know, do you think, would you like to hear from the son's therapist too?
Yeah.
So that'd be three professionals you need.
Dr. Katerina, what specifically besides the appointments are you wanting me to request from them?
Meyer, number one, was the daughter that upset? You know, did she believe that she was traumatized to the point where it should have stopped the reunification in the same way? It sounds like Dr. Yerkala said the son's therapist said it should be stopped. So that's what I would like to know from both of them. You know, one because it was not stopped, one because it was. And then Dr. Dubner, when you read what he said, it's like he didn't see any issues, but reunification should be stopped, and then under the supervision of Dr. Kellis. Or did he? And why? Because he felt that it was not a good match between Dr. Kellis, or because mother couldn't handle it, or was bad for the, you know, I don't know why he thought it should be stopped. Is that? I don't know if that matters, but that's what I.
You understand what you're saying, Ms. Galvin. I'm wondering, would it be appropriate to invite these therapists in case there are additional questions to a future meeting? It seems like there are several different questions for each provider.
That would be up to the committee members whether they think that is necessary, or whether they think the few questions that they have submitted or areas of questioning would be sufficient.
I'll defer to you, Mr. Diner. What do you think?
I think my experience, usually when we receive additional documents from other providers, we inevitably tend to have questions to ask them. So my preference is if we could invite them, and if they would attend, that would just speed up the process and prevent, you know, a second round of questions and you know, the whole back and forth that follows.
Yeah, that's true. You said that. Yeah, I agree. So we need them.
Would you authorize the staff, if requested by either of these additional providers, to issue a subpoena to the providers in case they would want one for their file?
For their attendance at a future CSC meeting?
Yes.
I don't see any problem with that. I would be fine with it.
And one of those professionals, we want to find out about the legality of releasing the records, so the law, right? And then the informed consent. And I thought I mentioned one other thing. Well, those are the main things. I think that's That's all I can recall that we want to follow up.
Sounds good to me. So I think I will make a motion to continue this matter until the next complaint screening committee and until such time that the staff is able to gather the information requested and request and obtain attendance from the other providers to the complaint screening committee. Is there a second?
Yes, second.
Thank you. So there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes, none opposed. I see Dr. Callis, you have your hand up. Just a brief, I mean.
Can you tell me how meeting?
I'm sorry, please say that again.
Could you tell me the date of the next committee meeting?
The next committee meeting is on August 18th. However, I do not know if this case will be reviewed on that date as I need to coordinate with the other providers, see if they're available those dates. We also already have several other cases on that agenda. So it might be likely either be August 18th or September 15th. That's on a Wednesday. And I will be in contact with both parties once the date is determined.
Okay. I know for a fact September 15th isn't going to work for this case because that's when it's going to trial.
Okay. 15th,
16th, and 17th. What is that? Is that at 8:30 in the morning? They're just going to trial?
It's all day, so. For 3 days.
Okay. Well, we can certainly make the effort to try to put it on August 18th. However, I don't know if I'll be able to gather that information and if the other providers are available. So if not August, then it would be October.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Callis. So with that, that was the last case on our agenda. I move to adjourn the meeting. Is there a second?
Yes, I second.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino. There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes. None opposed. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.